verses 9 through 14. Now when he departed from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. And they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him? Then he said to them, What man is there among you has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, Stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and it was restored, as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against them how they might destroy him.
Yesteryear, they didn't have microphones. They had to have batteries. The preachers had to have a big enough voice to get up there and shout it out. You know. Good morning. Good to see you this morning, especially those that are visiting with us. Glad you're here. Hope you enjoy being here. Hope you profit from it, and we'll come back and see us again. When Jan and I were first married, we had a meeting at Down Boulevard where we were members at that time, and seen the boy, one of the venerable preachers of the day. I guess he was well known in the 40s, 50s, and even into the 60s, I guess. But he came for a meeting, and he got up and he says, the congregation's quite large, 700 people or something like that. And he said, it was good to see all the pew packers. And I leaned over to Jan, and I said, what in the world is he talking about? And she says, I don't know. So I didn't feel so bad that if she didn't know that I didn't know. But anyway, after it was over, I asked the preacher, our local preacher, and I said, well, what is it? He said, meet children. They're the pew packers. And I said, well, I'm good. So we got pew packers over here. It's always good to see them. You know, they takes a lot of them to fill up a pew. So, you know, you've got a pretty good crowd when you've got all the pews packed with those kind of people. All three synoptic writers record this incident that just read. And there's some slight variations in those accounts, but nothing worth looking at, I don't think. But you can see the other passages that record the same thing. And I'm going to take a risk with this. They all have the same segue. And that is that the thing that immediately precedes these accounts is the same thing in each one of those Gospels that lead them to this particular event. And we have, to a degree, the same characters that are watching what is going on and become participants in this event. If you go to Matthew's Gospel, and we go back to the first verse, this is the segue. I never heard that word segue until a few years ago. I had no idea what it meant. I hate these French words, I think, they are. They keep popping into our vocabulary. I said, you know, there was something, I said something about NUL one time, and this guy said to the bridge, that's on way. That's how you pronounce that in this boredom, in case you don't know that. But I hope that doesn't happen today. I hope you don't hit with on way while we're sitting here talking about these things. Look at Matthew chapter 12, verse 1, beginning. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. And his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath. But he said to them, Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those with him? How he entered into the house of God and ate the showbread, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priest only? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath day the priest in the temple profaned the Sabbath and are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So here it is, the Sabbath day. And they're going through the grain field. And in those days, they would have the grain fields outside of any of the cities or villages. And they would leave paths through their fields so that somebody didn't have to walk all the way around, no narrow things that they could walk on, and save themselves a few steps. Jesus and his disciples, it's the Sabbath day, and they're going through the grain field. And they are hungry, and they probably it was maize, not corn, but and I don't know what maize looks like, except on the internet it showed up about the same thing. And they would pick the head and rub the grain off and eat it. And so that's what they were doing. And the Pharisees says, they are violating the Sabbath day. And what a tragedy that was for them to do that. Well, the real sin was not eating the grain that they talked about. In Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verse 24, the law says, when you come into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes at your pleasure, but you shall not put any in your container. When you come into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the heads with your hand, but you shall not use a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. In other words, you can't go reap this grain field, but you can get food as you walk by to do that. Florida College, we used to go over across the road to the orange groves and get oranges. And never did anybody say anything to us. The owners of those groves say anything to us. We were welcome to go over there, pick up a few, but I guarantee you, if we'd back a truck up and started loading it up with oranges, something would have happened. The police would have probably come. They were troubled by them eating this grain that didn't belong to them. But what was the problem is that they said it's not lawful to work on the Sabbath. Now, what they calculated as work is when they rubbed the grains off of the cob or whatever it was. And then when you lifted that to your mouth to eat it, they said, that's work, and that violates the Sabbath. And so you think, good gracious, in the words of Charlie Brown, that's the most trivial thing I ever heard in my life, isn't it? The folks, it was serious as far as they were concerned. These men felt perfectly justified in condemning Jesus and his disciples for doing that. So Jesus raises his defense about what they have accused him of, and he says, well, let me ask you a question. What about David and the showbread? And they were certainly, David was an icon, worshipped by the Jews, great, great ancestor. And he says, David and his men, the event was they were fleeing from Saul. They were running for their lives. And they had to have something to eat to keep going on. And so when they came to the tabernacle, David just went in and got the showbread off the table, which was an unlawful remedy. He brought it out, and he and his men ate that to sustain themselves in this particular crisis. And he said, I've never heard of you, any of you, criticizing David for doing that. And he says, you justify what he did. And it was a clear violation of the law, what David did. No question about that. And yet, they didn't condemn him. My mother-in-law, Sister Woodward, she was the one I first had said, well, it's all according to whose ox is gored. And I had to ask Jan what that meant, being raised in the house of Mother Woodward. She says it means how you look at something, what perspective. And that's the problem here. They hated Jesus, they wanted to condemn him. They loved David, and they wanted to justify him, so they just ignored the fact that he did something that was absolutely unlawful. I thank God justified what David did out of a case of necessity. But that's no reason for us today to think that we can violate what God says every time there's a necessity that comes up in our lives. Else we can just ignore any sacrifices at all. he says that these people are hypocrites. That's the big problem. Matthew 23:23, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. For you pay tithe of mint and anise cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Folks, there are some things that are weightier matters than the law. None of God's law is unimportant. But there are some things that are critical, critical for us being faithful child of God, children of God, and fulfilling God's will and purpose for us in this life. These men were following Jesus and the disciples only for the reason to condemn them. And the second question, he says, well, look at the tabernacle. He says, the priests are in there, they're offering sacrifices, they're burning incense, they're working on the Sabbath day, and you don't consider that a violation. And so it was a petty and puny thing that they did, and Jesus is not going to let them just get away with that. Here's the real crowd. He had broken, not the law, but he had broken their tradition. I think seven times in the gospel there is a record of Jesus healing on the Sabbath day, and every time the Jews criticized him for that as breaking the Sabbath. At least you say one thing, they were consistent. They had their healing, they had traditions about everything. And they had their healing traditions. And I read this in Tank Chumley's commentary on Matthew. I have read it in other places, but it was a handy reference as far as I'm concerned. And here's some of the things that they condemned or pointed out were violations, medically speaking. A healthy person could not take medicine on the Sabbath day. Not only you can take medicine on any day on the Sabbath day, but they felt that it necessary to say that so they could protect the Sabbath and keep it the sacred day that they need to be holy. If you had a toothache, you could take vinegar and put it in your mouth. And you know, vinegar was somewhat of a pain reliever. You remember when Christ was on the cross and he was in agony and somebody, or they put a vinegar on a stick and sponge on a stick, dip in vinegar and held it, he wouldn't take it. And I understand that was used to relieve pain. And Christ was experiencing all that pain for a reason. And he didn't want it assuaged in any way. And so here's the problem with vinegar. When you took it in your mouth for a sore tooth, you couldn't spit it back out. You had to swallow it. If you spit it back out, then it became a violation of the law of the Sabbath. And then if you had a sore throat, you could put oil in your mouth to kind of let it see if it could ease the pain of a sore throat, but you couldn't gargle it. If you gargled it, then that was a violation of the law, so you just had to let it run down in your stomach. I wonder how vinegar and oil tasted when they got mixed up in your stomach down there, and it must have been quite an experience for them to do that. A rabbi named Shammai said, you cannot go and comfort the sick or comfort the mourner on the Sabbath day. And you think, what in the world is going on here? It's just incredible that men could have those kind of ideas about protecting a day that God had said should be kept holy and gave some regulations about keeping it holy. But these things went so far beyond that, it was incredible. Well, exploding Sabbath traditions. And so Jesus decides to do that. And here we are now. Chapter 12 again, and let's start looking again at verse 9, where he goes up to the temple, to the synagogue, and for a period of worship. Here he is going to church, and that was a church. It was a church in the sense that they were called out and called into a body to worship their synagogue. And who's there but those scribes and those Pharisees laying in wait, laying in ambush for Christ and their synagogue. And the just like they were in the cornfield. And as luck would have it, there was a man in the audience that day with a withered hand. I said as luck would have it. That isn't true. As providence would have it. I believe this all was ordained by God. for the things that occurred. And here he is in the midst of this synagogue, and he's not come there looking for a healing, apparently. He's just come to worship. He couldn't go to the temple because if you were deformed, as it were, you couldn't do that. So he came to the synagogue to worship God. And the question arises, is it lawful? Now, in Matthew's gospel, it says that they ask him, and the Pharisees ask him, and in Mark and Luke, he says something to the Pharisees to that effect. And it probably is true that they both said that in the course of this conversation. Maybe Jesus came in, and knowing what their thoughts were, as we're going to see, he said, is it lawful? Because I suspect he suspected that they knew what he was going to do. And so then they may have said, is it lawful? Why don't you tell us if it's lawful, or show us whether it's lawful or not? So they waited expectantly before Jesus answered. Jesus did know their hearts. And he knew what their motive was in asking, and he knew there was not an ounce of compassion or human kindness in the whole bunch. It's all about, is it lawful? I've got a couple of personal experiences. I kind of hesitate to do those kind of things because it kind of distracts from the things that are being said. But I told this in the class the other day, so I'm going to tell it. I went up to Kroger's one day, the week before last, and it was in the morning, on a weekday. And there's practically nobody in the parking lot. That's about the only time you can ever go to Kroger's, and there's not a parking lot full. And there was a car there, and it was as close in that line to the door as you could get. So, you know, all of us like to be as close as we can get. So I pulled up. Well, the car had parked almost on the line of their slot there. Well, I saw that, and so I made sure that I moved most of the way over I could in mine so the tires on my car were right along the line on my side. Well, there was no cars done in the rest of the road out there. And so being considerate, I didn't want to block the guy's door if he comes out while I'm in there to get in his car. So I go in and I do my little shopping bit, and I come back out, and lo and behold, there's a car now parked on my left side. And it is so close that I can slide between it and me, but I can't get the door open at all. Nobody there. So I thought, I can't stand here all morning. I'm a very important person, and I have a lot of important things to do. So I went back around to the other side of my car, and I opened the door, and I got in on the passenger side. And we've got one of those little fancy dudes that's got two bucket seats and a big console all the way down the middle of the back seat. And if I'd have had a camera filming me trying to get across that console and that gear shift and all of that stuff into that other seat, it would have got the world's funniest video. The first thing is I had to take off my shoes. I could not get my feet up under the dashboard and get them across. And here I am, stove up in my age, you know, and overweight. And, I mean, I was, by the time I worked my way over that console, I was sweating. I finally breathed a sigh of relief and got in the driver's seat. And I started back out, and I noticed the person that was in that car parked so close to me had come out. I hadn't even noticed it in my struggles to get in the driver's seat. And they had a baby and a toddler in one of the baskets sitting by their car, and she was in, leaned over the back seat, put the groceries in there, I guess. I hate confrontations. But in my older years here, I have thought sometimes people need to be told something if you think it'll do them some good. And so I waited till she backed, and I backed up behind her. And I waited till she pulled her head out of the car, and I said, ma'am, did you notice that I could not get in my car from where you were parked? She didn't say a word to me. She looked at me. She walked around to the other side of her car, and she looked down, and she said, I'm in the line. But, well, I would have liked, I know I'm going to tell you what I'd like to do. But I said, did you ever hear of just common courtesy and kindness? And she didn't say a word. She went and got her child out of the buggy and put it in the car, and they took off. After I moved, she'd backed into me probably if I stayed there. all that mattered to her, not that somebody was inconvenienced, not that there was something that she could have done that would have created a problem. No, she said, I'm in the line, and that's all that mattered. And that reminded me of this story about these Pharisees, or about these Pharisees continually. Get in the lines and stay there. That's what's important. Nothing else is. And so they were critical people. So Jesus has a word to say to the unfortunate man. And he says, variously as the translations go, arise, stand up, step forward. There's a reason I think that Jesus did that. It seems that he wanted everyone to witness what has happened. The question's already out there on the floor. Is it lawful? And he wants to show them the end result of that question. And so he says, you stretch out your hand. He does, and it's immediately and completely healed. One of the writers says, just like his other hand, which was perfectly normal. Luke bothers to tell us that it was his right hand that had been crippled. And for some reason, some of these commentators said it wasn't a congenital thing. It was that he had injured it probably, and it had been for a long, long time. And so the hand is healed. The withered hand was a large handicap. Given the kind of ways you could make a living in those days, it was a huge handicap. And so it was a thing that you would love to have it differently if it could possibly be made differently so your hands could work for you and supply the needs of your family. Jesus didn't wait till Sunday to fix the man's hand. It's Saturday. It's the Sabbath day. That's what's important then. Sunday doesn't make any difference at this point. Well, why didn't he just ignore that and quietly said, come meet me down at the marketplace on Sunday tomorrow, and I'll take care of that for you. No. He did it right there on the Sabbath day, right in the midst of the synagogue. And then, of course, it was to demonstrate something. Let me tell you one more personal story. Not so personal, but something I was familiar with. Cecil Downs and his daddy was appointed an elder at the Taylor Boulevard congregation after there was a split. The congregation remained the same, 400 people, even after it divided. And so Cecil was not an elder when that happened, but they needed another elder. They had three, but they made him another elder. The other three were there when all of this went on. They had a gospel meeting, and one night during that gospel meeting, a guy got up to preach. I don't know who it was, but he, big crowd. And he got through preaching, and Cecil Downs, the guy who I'd least expect, got up, walked up into the pulpit, and said, folks, what was preached here tonight was not the truth. The Bible in no way justifies, commands by example, or any other thing what this man is advocating. So it's just simply not the truth. After the service was over, three other elders came up to him, and they said, well, we agree with you, which was not the truth. They didn't agree with him. They had a different view altogether. But I guess they were afraid to challenge him. And they said, but you could have waited. It didn't need to be done then. That was embarrassing. And he said it needed to be done right then. The people that heard the sermon needed to know that it was not true. And that that's not a position or a practice that a congregation, a faithful congregation of God's people engage in. So, bless Cecil's heart. Yeah, not many of us have the fortitude, the conviction, the determination to do something like that, but he did. And I think God was pleased with what he did. So the man's hand is healed right there on the Sabbath day. He could have waited until later, but Jesus wanted to make a point about this thing. And so he healed him right there. And how grateful do you think this man was that he had two good hands and he could go out, he could farm, or he could take care of a vineyard, he could plow, he could do whatever he wanted to. After this. So Jesus exposes their hardness. And he has another question, and he says, is it lawful to do good or evil? That's an abbreviated form. Well, what idiot would say, well, it's good to do evil. That's what it is. Of course it's true. Good to do good. And he says, now, here's a question that's relevant. Sometimes we want to say a principle out here, and it has no practical application to us. Friends, that's what the Bible is all about, is taking principles and helping us to understand them and apply them to our lives. And so he says, question, if your sheep falls in the ditch, what are you going to do about it? You've got to pull him out, right? I read a little bit about what Philip Keller said about sheep. He was a sheep herder, I think, in Australia, where it was. He lived at that time. And he would talk about sheep foundering, and that a sheep would get down and trying to get up would roll completely over on its back with its legs sticking up here, and was totally helpless. And if you didn't get up, they died in just a short while. And you think, added to that is a sheep fell into a ditch, that if a predator came along, he could just climb down the side of the ditch and make an end of the sheep. So they realized, here is something that's a valuable commodity. And they weren't going to let a dollar get away from them if they could help. He said, you'd get down the ditch and pull the sheep out of there. And which is more valuable, a sheep or a man? You wouldn't care if it was a Sabbath day or not. You're going to get him, get the sheep out of there. And so is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath? His actions, Jesus' actions, spoke far louder than just the word. Yes, it's to do good. I just did it. And I did it in front of all these people to relieve this man's suffering and to fix that thing, because I had the ability to do that. Not only to testify that I'm God's son and have that kind of power, but I did it for his good. Now he can, won't have to worry about making his living for himself and perhaps for his family. And so is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath? You see, what you need to learn is what the Sabbath is all about. There's an obvious answer, as I said, to those questions. And so here are some Sabbath truths. Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. For I desire mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. He said, what I want first from you is a compassionate and kind heart that will extend mercy to your fellow man and help them. What's the first great commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your soul, might, strength. And the second is like unto it. He says, you love your neighbor as yourself. Always been true. Mark chapter 2, verses 27 and 28. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. God didn't make the Sabbath day or the first day of the week a day to be burdened down with a bunch of things that weren't important. Remember, there are some things that are more weighty than others. And so he says, yes, is this a day that's special? It certainly should be. It's the day that the Lord has given us the opportunity to come together and in a very vocal and demonstrative way to express our love and our gratitude to him. He said, and the Sabbath, in essence, was the same thing for the Jew. And it's not that he wanted to burden you down with something, but he wanted it to be something that was beneficial to you. And he says, the Son of Man is also the Lord. Whatever I say about the Sabbath is what God proves. And then lastly, Matthew 9:13, but go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. And so that's what this is the whole thing about, this mission into the world. It's not to focus people who are self-righteous particularly, but sinners who need help and who recognize their failures and their shortcomings. Jesus, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is the portrayal of God in this world. If God came, that's what he would do. If God the Father was in this world, he'd have done the same things that Jesus would have done when he was here, because indeed, Jesus was God in the flesh. And as we see that oftentimes in the Gospels that we've talked about a couple of weeks, that Jesus acted not just to establish the fact that he had the power to overcome the natural things of this world and work miracles, but he had the compassionate heart that reached out to people say, well, I've been with God to do this, and I want one more personal experience of Him. Jan had been to the hospital this week before last, I guess, to visit. And we got out and we started home, and it was getting late. I said, you want to stop and get something and to eat before we go home? About 2 o'clock. And we just happened, this wasn't by chance. This is by providence. They were right by Wild Eggs. I love Wild Eggs. An omelet with ham and cheese grits and one blueberry pancake. There's nothing better than that. So we stopped and we went in Wild Eggs to have lunch. There were very few people. They closed at 2:30. There was two young men sitting over the table, and a few other people scattered hither and yon, but not very many people. Well, we had no sooner got our food and began to eat than these two young men were getting ready to leave. And one started to get up. Nice looking fellow, probably in his 20s. And it broke my heart. He could hardly get himself in a position so he could walk. His body terribly twisted. And walking, you really, it was remarkable that he could walk because it looked like he would be totally out of balance when he did that. And he passed by my table, and I thought, if I had the ability to reach out and touch him and heal him or say a word, there's no question. I'm too tender-hearted, I think. But those things touched me, and I shed a tear about them. I think this young man's going to face that kind of thing the rest of his life. Lo and behold, they had no sooner got out, walked out, than an older man and a lady sat down right next to us with their daughter, who was probably in her 40s. And she was just about the same way. And she turned around and she spoke to Jim. I said, very difficult speech. Speech impediment that went along with the body. And we struck up a conversation with her and her parents. And I thought, how wonderful it is that they take care of her, even though she's a grown woman. I don't know whether she could possibly live. But they're going to have that the rest of their lives. And I sat there and wondered, well, when they pass away, what's she going to do? How is the other family that will take care of her when that time comes? And my friends, if we can't be compassionate and share the hurt and the disappointment and the needs of the world, what are we good for? That's what God expects us to do. That's supposed to be the end result of Christianity. How could these Pharisees be so calloused that they could criticize the Lord for doing something like that and helping this individual? It just really makes me wonder how people can get that hard-hearted. Do you feel compassion for your fellow man? I hope every one of you is just like me. And when you see those kind of things, you shed a tear about them. Even though you might not be able to do something directly about them, you can shed a tear at least and ask God to make life as pleasant as He can for people that are handicapped in that way. Some things are more important than others. Keeping in the lines, sometimes something more noble should take precedence than that. What happened if you had saved up your Sunday contribution? You're really a generous giver. You give all that you can. You might really make a sacrifice in your giving. And you come, and there's something satisfying about when you go through these acts of worship, and it comes time to put your money in the plate, that I've done all I can possibly do. I've given all I can possibly give. I have made some sacrifices in my life. I have foregone some things that I would love to have for myself, but I realize there's a greater need than that. And so I'm looking to make that sacrifice. And it's really something special to you that you're able to do that. Have that attitude, and lo and behold, your neighbor's house burns down during the week. And they are left destitute, and all the neighbors around there know that they need help in every way. Clothes for their backs, food for their table, where they're going to spend some time till their house is and they're just destitute. They lost everything. But you think the first thing I needed to do is take my money that I was going to give to the Lord to go help them? Would that be the right thing to do? I want to tell you something. We've got some people in this congregation who have compassionate hearts. And I look at them sometimes and I'm ashamed about my own attitudes and what kind of compassion that I have. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, you remember what the Apostle Paul says? Now the purpose of the commandment, here's what the commandment is all about, is love from a pure heart and a good conscience and faith unfeigned. He said, the reason God commands us is to not lay burdens on us, is to effect a change in our hearts so it changes our whole attitude in the way that we live. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of Jesus Christ, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and perfect and acceptable will of God. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And so what we're looking for is, as we follow God's will in our lives, it's the thing that will transform us and make our lives something special. And make them different from the world. And so the Pharisees have witnessed this thing, and they're duly impressed, and they say, God, forgive us. We've distorted and misapplied the whole thing about the Sabbath, and we've got our attitude now has changed because Jesus has shown us what one ought to do. And even when it's the Sabbath, if there's something that's lawful and you need to do, then you need to do it. It says in Matthew chapter 12, verse 14, then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. Mark says, then the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him how they might destroy him. And Luke says, but they were filled with rage and discussed with one another how they might, what they might do to Jesus. That's a reaction. It didn't change a thing with these hard-hearted people. They're hypocrites at the core. They're interested only in their own self-aggrandizement. And they care nothing about what the gospel is really all about. They don't care anything about what God's truth is all about. Why do they hate him? Why is that? They hated his power to work miracles. It made them look bad by comparison. And so even how they combated that thing, they said, well, he doesn't do it by the power of God. He does it by the power of the devil. And Jesus showed the foolishness of such a thing. If the devil works against himself, how can I outstand his provider like that? He contradicted their rules. So they were supposed to be the experts in the law and find out that they're not even close to knowing what the law really is all about. And he showed their complete misunderstanding of the Scripture. They've been familiar with the Scripture for 1,500 years. And they still don't have a clue. And I sometimes wonder about us. And I hope we have a better grasp of what the Bible is all about than these people did. He openly condemned their teaching. And that was a public embarrassment to them. And so they hated him. No matter what good he did, they wanted to get rid of him. When we have things brought to our attention by someone that we are failing to practice, that we are failing to accept, it contradicts what we're doing. It is our reaction, I hate him. Wish he'd never brought that up. I hate him. No. I hope it's not. I hope it's, Lord, I've misunderstood this thing. I failed to do this thing. And I pray, God, that you will help me to do better. If the gospel and sacrifice of Christ doesn't change our hearts, then the gospel is useless to us. Anybody here that we can help this morning with their spiritual life, we'll be glad to do that in whatever way we can. Together we stand.